Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. It is the 20th of May. What?
I was saying save it for the show. Alan's arguing with me already.
We're making faces at each other already.
Yeah, I know.
But they're fun faces.
Yeah, they're fun faces.
They're fun faces. Yeah. WAMSA.org if you'd like to see exactly what faces and match them up with your favorites. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here making a lovely face, smiley face right now, I would say.
Yes. Some guy went on, tweeted last night. It upset Jonas a lot, my son, who's in New Orleans, and he called me ugly. The guy says, Chartok's ugly.
No.
So, yeah, so, but the point is, you should see the guy who made the comment.
I'm funny. Not saying anything.
And Libby Post is here, and I hope she says a lot. She's a political consultant and with us this morning. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us as well. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
All right. Well, what we started off while the discussion started before you all started listening. was the issue of Jill Abramson, the former executive editor of the New York Times, ousted New York Times editor, who spoke in Winston-Salem, North Carolina yesterday at Wake Forest University. And there was some question last week whether she would still go ahead with the address. She said, I don't want to be the center of attention. If you don't want me to be the center of attention, they said, we want you to come and you're a shining example of what people go through and the adversity that people have in life, and we would like you to continue with the address. So she went before the graduates yesterday at the commencement, and ultimately, I think it is safe to say that she took the high road.
She riled them. Yep.
What was so interesting is they expected, you know, at these graduations, you don't get huge turnouts other than the parents and the faculty who were sort of compelled to show up, and the crowd was immense. Standing room only.
Right, it was such an important class that all the media showed up.
Yeah, the media were there and they wanted to do that.
She made several great comments saying, I'm sure all this attention is because of you, you fabulous graduates. And what's going to happen next? I don't know either. I'm sort of in the same boat as you.
Funny.
She was very funny.
Well, what's
about
this whole thing
too?
With the tattoo, though? I don't quite
She's
understand.
She's got a tattoo of the logo of the New York Times.
Of the T between her shoulder blades, I think. It's on her back.
It's of the T for the Times. And they asked her if she's going to get rid of it. She said, absolutely.
One of the students asked.
Chance,
that.
Yeah.
She said, not a chance.
That's
She's still
painful.
Very proud of her time.
I don't
painful.
Approve.
It's too painful. Are you kidding?
I personally don't approve of tattoos, so it's a whole other story.
Alan, it's one more thing that you and I agree on.
I have one.
Do you?
Yes.
Where is it?
On my shoulder.
Oh, okay.
It's against our religion.
It's against your religion?
It is, actually.
Wow.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you can't use that on religious grounds.
No piercing, no tattoos.
No defiling one's...
No defiling one's body. So,
oh, yeah. It's decorating your body.
No,
it's
no,
not
no.
defiling.
No,
no, oh, my gosh.
I don't understand how people expect to go through life when they're 20 years old and they're buff, or women who are nice bodies when they're 20 and get all these things. What happens when you're 45 and 50 and everything
well,
drops?
Who cares then? It's all your life's over then.
What do you mean everything?
No, seriously. I did mine when I was 60.
Yeah.
It was an elderly indiscretion.
Well, someday you'll tell us the story.
Maybe.
A night in Las Vegas.
Maybe.
Okay,
but it's still your body, right? And you can do with it what
yes,
you wish.
If you'd like.
Absolutely.
That,
do you have one?
It's a matter of choice, Libby.
No.
I just do not.
I would not.
I did pay my sons in order not to get one, you know, when they were teenagers. You know,
yeah.
So they were kind of horrified when I got one. But I think doing it when you're, you know, all grown up and doing it when you're a teenager are different things. So.
Roselle has a little diamond thing right here in her nose.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Wow.
I worry about hygiene on that. I'll have to discuss that.
We'll let that, silence hang in the air for a moment. And then, so the other issue here, and while we're talking about Jill Abramson, so she comes out.
Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah,
yeah, that's
believe
right,
it or not,
Jill.
That
her
is what we were talking about.
Of the New York Times T.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how that
the
started.
Gothic
we're trying to figure out whether to blame her or not for what happened. That was our discussion before the program began.
And then, so now there's this whole kerfuffle as to whether overpayment. The reports originally were that Abramson may have been paid less than her male predecessors. Reports have been disputed by Times executives. And then many people who were at the graduation yesterday said that I hope it's not true, and we're, you know, trying to, I guess, like a lot of other people, try to figure out exactly what the situation was. But they're saying that with the experience and with the and that she was being paid what a man would be paid in that role. That is the Times.
It's a lot of money. You know, we're talking over $500,000. Mm-hmm. However, it's a huge position, and there were other things at play. For example, other executives who answered to her, were they getting less or more money? That's a very bad situation when your underlings get more than you. And there's bonuses involved. So there's some play in words, whether her salary was the same as her male predecessor, but what about if you factor in bonuses? So it's almost a legal issue. The point, however, is that we're talking about equity and pay for men and women. That is a good thing. And we have Jill Abramson to thank for kind of like concentrating that conversation.
The highest paid person at WAMC is?
Well, it ought to be you.
It isn't by any means.
Interesting.
Who is it? We have somebody in our sales department who would, I'm sure, prefer not to be named, but who makes considerably more than I do. And we're delighted.
Delighted by that.
We're delighted that she does.
Yeah.
Because of commission, right?
Yeah.
Well, in the state of New York, it's not Andrew Cuomo who makes the most money.
No, it's that guy up there.
Alan Kelly-Eros at Nano. And he brings in tons of money and has done amazing things for the state. So, there's precedent for that. I don't think that was the situation at the New York Times. And the other thing that's coming into play are management styles. There's a study out. I sent it to you this morning, Joe, to take a look at it, showing that the chance for a woman CEO to be ousted is far higher than it is for a male. And part of it is that women are taking these jobs, these top-level jobs, when there's a crisis, when there's what they're calling a glass cliff, and you have to take daring action or make major change. Jill Abramson was in that position trying to turn over this old, storied news institution into a digital powerhouse. And when you begin to make change, there's always backlash, there's always a problem, and the women then take the hit.
But didn't she also take the hit because they, and I'm not saying this is the truth,
right?
Because, as you just said, she's trying to turn it into this digital powerhouse because she wasn't fast enough in turning it into
Well, you know, that it's really kind of interesting because one of the things she did was try to hire a woman from The Guardian, who's kind of a master at this. And she wanted to hire her as another managing editor, which would have put her on a par with Dean Baquet, her rival in the newsroom, who has now taken over her job. And he objected to that for reasons I think we can all understand.
And we all want to do it.
And his protest to management seems to be the catalyst for her firing.
I've seen that before. I don't think it's... I mean, if somebody comes to you and they say it's this or that, you listen very carefully if you're running an institution. I mean, I sit here as the CEO of this, and I have to say that if somebody comes to see me and says, and I need to save them here, and they make a reasonable argument, you know, if as long as it's reasonable, you try to do what they ask.
Well, I think the publisher's position has been the same for a number of years. He had two highly talented, really different people, Dean Baquet and Jill Abramson.
Yes.
He picked the woman to be the top person and put Dean Baquet in the second. I think that was the big problem right there. Both of these are known quantities, and they didn't change over the past 3 years. And there's friction between them. There's also friction between the publisher and Jill Abramson. She didn't work nice with anybody. That's just not her style. As I said, she's a lone investigative reporter.
Well, don't you really have to work well with the boss?
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. And that's a big failing, and that's why she's out. I mean, no one has said, oh, he shouldn't have fired her. We've been saying, why do you have to fire her in that way?
Sure.
Why did it have to get to this point? But no one has ever, ever maintained that.
So did they mishandle the whole thing, the Times?
I think he made a mess of it, yes. Yeah. And there was a very sympathetic article written about him, I can't remember now where, saying the last time he had a problem in management was over the Jason Blair plagiarism. And he waited, some would say, far too long to get rid of the editors who made that possible. This time he seems to have overreacted in the other way. He acted peremptorily rather than, you know, let her out gently to, you know, soothe the way. She doesn't look like someone who's going to yell and scream about her treatment. So why did she have to be handled this way?
I just want to give exact numbers to the study that Rosemary
mentioned.
Over the past 10 years, 38% of female chief executives of the world's 2,500 biggest public companies were fired, compared to 27% of their male counterparts. So,
right.
It's a pretty good gap, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, and they take precarious jobs.
And they're difficult. Expected to do better than men. I mean, right. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
We're expected to be able to do that and everything else in our lives without any kind of compensation or understanding. And so it's just, I mean, we read about this study about the stressfulness of life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just one more thing. And
yeah, this study looked at right. women still tend to right. be in charge in the home, even right. if they're a CEO in the office.
That's right. That's yeah. right. Yeah. Yeah, so they're still doing
and they also
else.
Come to the jobs with far more, do you see that part, Joe? Far more experience
right.
than men. They've moved around. They've done a number of different positions. The men kind of like have a straight line to the
well,
top where
the
women
boys
have
club.
To.
You know, it's like, oh, come on, we'll make sure you get it, buddy. Come, you know, play a round of golf and yeah. we'll take care of everything for you. And that doesn't happen with the women. You know, it'll be interesting to see with everything that's gone on at General Motors, how long she's going to last.
Don't you yeah. think you guys are blatantly guilty of, you know, putting...
Reverse discrimination?
Well, sort of in a way, because you say, this is what women do, and this is what men do. No, this is what some women do, and this is what some men do. I mean, you can't really say, you know, all women are the same anymore. You can say all men are the same.
We're looking at trends and patterns. So this study is of a broad... brush of men and women CEOs. So they're yeah. men and women who are equal, you would think, at least by position and yeah. And pay. And what we find is that no, they don't get to the high jobs in the same way. They are not treated the same once they're there.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think there's some worry for concern. Of course, it's only some.
No, but I do make a point. I think you could respect a little, which is the idea that that all men and all women are not alike. You are right. If you take a look at the pattern, you're absolutely right. You know, this is not good. But on the other hand, I've seen bad women managers and bad men managers. Mm-hmm. And, you
yeah,
know,
and I think Jill Abramson was a bad manager. Let me just say it outright. I think that one piece of evidence, one piece of anecdote over another has emphasized that. But she was not treated the same as bad men managers. She was summarily fired, humiliated yeah. in public. That doesn't happen to men. They either stay at the New York Times or they're ushered out, you know,
quietly.
Well, maybe they took the deal and maybe she didn't.
Why is she being so quiet then?
I don't think that's true. I think she was caught totally off guard.
Oh, I got that. Well, they said even in the article in the Times that the address that she
Startled.
Sent to them originally was all about media freedom and then had nothing, you know, didn't even... have an inkling as to
right. I don't think she
on.
Knew this was going to happen.
Oh no, right.
So,
all right. But I did read something that said that she had that they had offered her a different departure methodology, and that she didn't take it. Whatever
I don't know.
It's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's real quick because I want to get to another issue before the break, but before we take another break. But real quick, last question: where does she end up?
I think her future is very bright. She's a fantastic reporter. She came from the Wall Street Journal. She has written for New Yorker. She'll end up writing probably freelance with her stuff appearing in the best places.
I predict she'll end up as a professor just like you, Rosemary.
I'd take her class.
That's what I think.
Yeah. At Columbia?
She's a perfect candidate for it, and then she can write anything she wants.
Write books.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Get a good deal.
She certainly is not hurting for money. That's
right.
not the
She'll
issue.
She'll write an autobiography or a memoir.
I hope not. I hope she will do real journalism, not just write
know
about
she's
herself.
Not working, hurting for money.
She isn't. I mean, she
well,
just
if you live
isn't.
At a certain standard, you know, then $500,000, maybe, you know, $30,000 to somebody
else.
Her
daughter is a surgeon.
Daughters give money to mothers, do they?
She put her through school to become a
surgeon.
She's worked for elite publications for most of her adult life. I don't think she's hurting for money.
Well, you're probably right, but you may be wrong.
I think it's her career. But yeah, a nice little professorship from which she can write. Yeah, I can see that. That's not.
All right. Let's take a break, and we'll be back and talk about other stuff. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC goes on plastic and reconstructive surgery at Berkshire Health Systems. Plastic reconstructive and hand surgery and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santamaria. BerkshireHealthSystems.org/plastics. Tannery Pond Concerts, New Lebanon, New York. Presenting the Dover String Quartet and pianist Alan Goldstein this Saturday at 6 p.m. 888-820-1696. And Carey Institute for Global Good presenting Pleasures of the Palate, A Taste of Italy with Italy's Nick Coleman and Dan Amatuzzi. May 25th, 4 p.m. Reservation required, 518-797-5100.
We have a few minutes, so let me just throw out this very light question and bat it around for a bit. Should the mayor of New York... Or let me put it another way. Should the tabloid newspapers of New York City apologize to the mayor's wife?
Yes.
Well, the New York Post damned well ought to.
No. All right. So let me just set it up real quick. Mayor Bill de Blasio issued an unusual and stern rebuke of New York City's tabloid newspapers on Monday, calling on them to apologize for publishing front page headlines that suggested his wife, Shirlane McRae, had admitted to being a reluctant mother to the couple's daughter.
Bad mother or something like
right.
that.
I mean, it's
I was a bad mother.
They show a big, you know, full-page picture of her, not particularly flattering. And I considered it to be, well, I mean, I don't want to start this stuff, but I considered it to be really bad news. We know the Post doesn't like him, doesn't like de Blasio. And I suspect there may have been some racist content in all of this.
I think it's racist, sexist. I think what they did was, it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, the woman was talking honestly, like any other professional woman would, about the challenges of being a mom. And being a professional, and it was all new, and she was just being honest. And they have to twist it and turn it into something ugly.
I could not disagree more.
And you know why, Rosemary? Because you're a sort of, you and Rex and the rest of that crowd are professional journalist types. And anything that's bad for any newspaper is freedom of the press.
No way
terrible.
Should we be encouraging politicians to tell newspapers what to do.
Why not?
B, she doesn't need the sympathy. Look at what I'm just hearing here. Oh, poor
But
Charlene.
Why not?
She,
no, but
she doesn't.
I want to know why not? Why
because,
can't a politician
Because
fight
he
back?
Could have him then apologize for running the story they did yesterday about how the North Bronx is awash in crime.
No, this
we
is
don't like
personal.
That story. It makes,
No.
And it
this
isn't
is personal.
Personal. It was accurate.
This is about his wife. It's not accurate.
Can I say it and then you can attack me?
Okay,
you should apologize to me.
I'm
just
sorry.
So you know.
We have two minutes,
so we may have to take a break in the action, let you get all fueled up, and then we can start it again.
Okay.
All right.
She spoke really honestly, and I loved what she said, which was portrayed accurately in the paper, which is, you know, being a mother's not as great as we make it seem in this country where it's like apple pie and motherhood. Right. Like, it's wonderful. It's hard work. She was ambivalent about it, as many women are. I loved what she said. I love that this is a big story, and the paper helped make it so by putting that provocative headline on it.
Oh,
good for them, good for her.
Oh, it's disgusting.
She wrote, "I was 40 years old. I had a life. The truth is, I could not spend every day with her daughter. And I didn't want to do that. I looked for all kinds of reasons not to do it. It took a long time for me to get into I'm taking care of kids and what that means. They turned it into I hate being a mom."
Yeah. Which I think is great because in our society, that's how it's perceived. You're supposed to love motherhood. You're supposed to want to sacrifice
fatherhood.
And give up. Same thing.
You know what
parenthood.
You know what
If they had put the mayor saying saying I have trouble, I'm an ambitious politician, would they have done that? Would they have said... I was a bad dad.
They might have. I mean, Jimmy Carter got skewered for saying I lusted in my heart, which is merely that he was tempted like every other man.
Not me.
Point is, yes, they skewer men. When you're a newspaper and you want attention, you're going to put a headline that grabs attention. This worked, and it brought attention to an absolutely wonderful quote.
All right,
but a wonderful
idea.
You're an apologist.
But it was a negative frame.
You owe me an apology.
You're an apologist.
It was a negative frame, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to reload, and we'll be back in just a moment. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Help us incite the riot. Tell us what you think. 1-800 No, I'm sorry. It's... What is it? Roundtable.
Give money while us your opinion.
Roundtable WAMC.org. Right. We'll be back in the roundtable panel with Rosemary, Libby, and Alan after this short break from NPR. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. In case you missed our first half hour, it's available online in a little bit and it's probably worth listening to. And then bring you up to date on what we're talking about. We started the discussion we started talking about Jill Abramson. Then we moved to the mayor of New York City calling out the tabloids of the city over headlines that they put on the paper regarding his wife. And I think we have much more to discuss on that issue, but as a way of jumping into it, we will go to the numerous letters that we received, which will eventually get us to that point.
Okay, here we go. Rosalind says, Roz, good morning. Thanks for the lively start of my morning. A commentator on Meet the Press said this Sunday made the observation that one of the differences in Jill Abramson's firing and that of men at her level was the fact that not one word of thanks or positive recognition of her loyalty and work at the Times over the years was mentioned in any public statement. Is that true?
No. Both McKay and the publisher said good things about her work.
I knew that. Okay. Then Johnny says, I'm a little concerned. Is WAMC now carrying Crossfire? Wrong! And let's see here. Bill Bannon said, I found your discussion about the glass cliff regarding women executives very interesting and bold-faced interesting. Though it's only one case of many, it brought to mind Carly Fiorina. I've been an HP employee for many years, decades, and I can tell you that HP would have been much better off today if Carly had gone off the glass cliff much sooner.
How lovely.
The cult of Carly kept her in place as an HP CEO long after it was obvious to most that her leadership of HP had been a dismal failure. Keep up the good work. And Narcissa says,
great name. Wow.
How much of the reason that Jill Abramson had conflicts with the managing editor were to do with the fact that they would not accept her authority as a woman? How often are women told they have to lean in and ask for more money, take charge, etc., and yet when they take the advice, exactly this keeps happening? Women are evaluated differently. If she were the third female editor, I believe it was just her competence at stake. With the first, I think the perception of her competence, that's the issue, as scientific studies show. How else really to explain why there were so very few women leaders still? With respect and appreciation, as always, says Narcissa.
Interesting letter.
Okay, and here comes, I'm getting it right now from Ashley. Alan's not all men argument is a classic derailing technique that takes away from the point of the discussion, which is that female CEOs are absolutely, in capital letters, absolutely, treated differently and held to different standards than their male counterparts. No one really needs reminding that all men or women conform to a certain set of behaviors. And I think, Joe, unless you've got something else there, I think that's it.
The only thing that I have is a tweet that came in that says, I appreciate the feminist talk, but don't make it the only topic. Something else, please. Did they ever find that airplane? We welcome your comments. Roundtable.
That's good.
Great. We spent days.
WAMC.
Or what's going on in the Ukraine?
Are we done on the mayor's wife?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Good. We can move on?
It was just wrong.
It was completely right.
Wrong.
It was wrong.
Okay, yeah.
We're not done. We can talk about other things here. There's a lot I want to get to. So let's go to the British cleric who prosecutors had said had devoted his life to violent jihad and sent young men around the world to train and fight, was convicted Monday of all 11 terrorism charges against him. This is the conviction of a British cleric who was convicted on all terrorism charges yesterday. Preet Bharara was out at the in the front of the courthouse making the announcement yesterday. So what do we make of this?
proof again that the U.S. justice system is fabulous. You can try terrorists in there and get fair trials. You didn't need that whole secret court thing that the Bush administration tried to set up. And I think it was a triumph for American system.
Hmm. Well, you know, you never know. With a jury trial, you never know. There's always a chance that somebody on the jury is, you know, of a different persuasion. So, for example, I had a cousin who got pushed in front of a railroad, pushed in front of a subway, and he broke many bones in his body, but he was not dead. And the lone holdout on the jury was a woman who said that Jesus had told her to do this. She stuck to her guns, and they had to have a second trial. It was a mistrial. They had to have a second trial. So, you know, even our system of justice with, you know, 12 people on a jury, mm-hmm. where one person, you know, sort of is off the wall, you can still have a very bad outcome.
Sure, and we probably could think of many other, you know, individual cases where that happened, but there is no other system that's better that I'm aware of, and certainly not the horrible secret kangaroo court system that was set up to try a jihadist because supposedly our system couldn't handle it.
I know this is a silly question, but let me ask you this. If that trial had taken place in Pakistan, for example, what do you think the jury would have come up with?
Wow, I think they would have thrown the indictment out.
Yeah, I think they would have made him king for a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. I found this, I was going to mention this yesterday, and we ran out of time, and I find this to be an interesting story. My question yesterday was going to be, could the I just realized I didn't actually
send that to us.
Send the story to you, did I? I sent the other one twice. Anyway,
we're smart.
Would the New York Racing Association be stupid enough to not allow the horse that won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes to be the first Derby winner in 36 years and to turn away all of that revenue over an issue of a nose strip?
You know, we know what we're talking about here, right? These nasal strips.
Yeah. Right.
They make them for humans, too.
The horse doesn't snore.
Right. They make them for humans. You put them over your nose. And it holds your nostrils open.
That's why it
right.
looks great.
And it allows really more air to go in.
Yes, and it ruins your skin. At least in my case.
I don't think the horse was as worried about it, but right.
I have a question. Sure. I don't follow sports closely. Why don't all horses use these straps?
Because all horses don't need them.
This particular horse had a cold.
Oh, okay.
Had a cold, and it was something that was used.
I don't think that's right.
That's it. I think
no. In fact, every
oxygen.
Course, every single race that he won, he's had this thing on. Right.
Supposedly, it increases your intake of oxygen.
Oxygen.
It helps.
Yes.
It helps in strenous exercise, which winning.
But they were asking
that's why
if he could do
players
it.
Wear it.
So why doesn't every horse wear it?
Well, because every horse doesn't need it. There are people whose noses are constructed so they don't have that problem. But there are people. Whose noses are wide, and they get all the air, and they don't have, what do you call that when something breaks? And they don't
deviated
have
septum.
Deviated septum. They don't have all of that
answer,
stuff.
Yeah. To answer your question also directly, in all other racing circuits, in most of the racing circuits, they are allowed, and most of them do wear them.
Right. Okay.
Oh, so
but Joe was right on the you were
New
right
York,
on the money. I mean, you could
in New York.
We could role play. We could role play what that discussion must have been like. Mm-hmm. What are we crazy? What are we out of our minds?
We haven't had a to be only the 12th horse in ever to have to be a Triple Crown winner. We have an opportunity for millions of people to be looking at the state of New York to be coming to the track. Not to mention the money that
and
is going to be bet.
And this is the third leg, which is hardly. The Kentucky Derby anyway. So, it's really what? Did I say something bad?
Yeah, that wasn't.
I said something bad?
Well, it's the end. It's
a
final.
Big one.
You
got to win
if you get
the
one. No, but you still have
a crossfire.
This
crossfire.
One is a big one.
No,
if you don't
right.
win the first two, then this one
this
sort
is the
of
the biggest one in that regard.
Everybody knows about the Kentucky Derby. You know, that's huge.
Right.
When you come to the Preakness and these other things, you know, wow.
Yeah, because, but yeah. What's interesting about this, I mean, your point is interesting, because if you look at all of the horses that have won the Kentucky Derby, the point is that only 12 have won the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness Stakes, and the Belmont.
No, I got that.
The Triple Crown. So that makes this race huge. Right.
Which is why you don't turn the horse away, because right. you can't have the nose strip.
And right. because it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And Naira is failing, and they need this infusion.
This could be Elizabeth Taylor in National Velvet.
You think?
Maybe they just started all this to get, like, radio shows talking about it and to get more people to come.
Wrong. I think when you win two legs, you people are going to talk.
Yeah. It's huge, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a big deal if it happens. And
I'm
and
even
I think
interested.
What's, we have had, in recent history, we have had horses that have won the first two, and
lost
the trainers leg. have made a calculated decision because of money to go to other races and not even to run, or that the horse has been hurt, or other tragedies have happened, and we've been robbed of that that opportunity to have a Triple Crown winner. Yeah. Also, you are looking at a situation here where you have a really cool story. The background of this horse is fascinating, a rags to riches story.
That's right, right.
And that because everyone talks about that this is a millionaire's game, and this guy proved that
right.
it doesn't have to be. And you got a great horse and a great story, and this horse, like, really seems to have it.
Okay, I want $2 on this horse right away.
Okay, well, you'll make 20 cents.
Yeah, that's right. It's just
or maybe a dime.
You might have to pay them.
Yes, I think you may have to pay them just for the privilege of betting on this
right,
horse.
Right, right.
But I read that the horses today are bred not for the long run. You know, I mean, Hopalong Cassidy would get on that white horse and, you know, ride like crazy every time. You wonder how he could do that. But these horses are bred specifically for, you know, like, a race. Mm-hmm.
It's just
two
like
races.
It's yeah. just
Some
like
are.
Pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, now pitchers just do relief in the
That's wrong.
In, you know, it, like Mariano Rivera. He just pitches in the last inning to save the game. There's no pitchers now.
Specializations like
right,
doctors.
Right. That pitch the entire game. Hardly ever. Same thing.
I love how humans always figure out the way to win and then just take all the little shortcuts or extra steps or strategy to get to it. I just find that fascinating.
Oh, that's human nature.
Well, yes,
who we are.
Exactly.
I was just looking at a figure, but roughly in the greater racing circuit, about 70% of the horses wear the strips. No.
Okay, so it is widely used.
Yeah, they're widely used. But it's something that had always been there wasn't enough evidence in New York, so they.
I wonder if it hurts
time
the horses.
To update that rule.
Yeah, I wonder if it hurts the horses as much as it hurts the humans to take the strip off.
That's right.
It does hurt.
Well,
yes.
Don't ever tell you.
I don't know.
Wow, I'm gonna go use one tonight myself. Now I want to see.
Have you ever tried it?
No.
Oh, they're really,
I must
they're
have one of those wide
good.
Noses that the air comes in.
Right.
I never need it.
Maybe you do.
Yeah, I don't know.
When
don't
your know allergies either. Are bothering you, it's a good time to use it.
Yeah, huh. Okay.
All right.
Next.
Wrong. Let's move on to other issues. Let's go to the I love the story. So let's talk about it. I don't know what it means. I mean, I know what it says it means. I don't know if it really means it. Be gentle with your fellow man, O spouses, relatives, neighbors, and children.
Ooh.
A new paper from researchers in Denmark reveals that constantly fielding demands from or fighting with your co-travelers in life can kill you.
I wonder what that means.
For the study, at the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health, almost 10,000 middle-aged Danish men and women, aged 36 to 52, were tracked for 11 years. At the outset, they answered two questions assessing how stressful they found their social interactions. The first, in your everyday life, do you experience that any of the following people demand too much of you or seriously worry you? Measured a sense of crushing expectation from friends, neighbors, partners, extended family, or children. The second, drawing on the same cast of characters, read, in your everyday life, do you experience conflicts with any of the following people?
They should come and do this study in New York City.
Well, wait, who are the following people? Spouse?
Yes.
Friends.
Mother-in-law?
Friends, neighbors, partners, extended family, or
group.
Children.
Mm-hmm.
9% of the participants reported always or often experiencing demands or worries from their partner, 10% from children, 6% from family, 2% from friends, 6% always or often experience conflicts with their partner. Now for the morbid part. Over the course of those 11 years, 6% of the men and 4% of the women vacated their mortal shells.
I like that.
When the, they died. When the researchers refracted the deaths through the responses they gleaned about quarrelous spouses and mean neighbors, they found a few links, that there are direct links between.
Did you say quarrelous or querulous spouses?
Arguing.
Arguing.
Oh, arguing.
Yes.
Well, it seems to me I took something away from this. I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I took something away from this in my 43-year marriage. If you argue, you can get in trouble because, you know. But if you give in, and I hope Rosella's listening now, if you give in and you virtually never, you know, really majorly contest, then you'll live longer. That's what I took away from it.
Happy wife, happy life.
So I just give in. I don't argue.
I don't know, for the rest of us, right?
I think I have to take the Zen view of this, which is that people will always disappoint you. Your spouses, your friends, your children, they will always disappoint you.
And
you must
Zen.
And you must like them despite that.
That's
you appreciate them despite that. And that's very Zen.
That's not the way it is. I don't
find
that. You
always look for the best in people. That's what I do.
Oh my God.
No, you look for the best. I don't find that at all.
But I think they should come to New York City and do this study.
Yeah.
Because I mean...
The only thing we've ever fought over in our house is a piece of Danish.
Yeah, right. Denmark, Sweden, you know, they're all very mellow up there. So arguing is they need to come to New York and do this study.
Meanwhile, Megan Brooks writes at Medscape, one of the few early mortality risk factors to rival smoking and high blood pressure, she points out, is...
Being on the round table.
Social isolation.
That's right.
Trying to get away from all those disappointing people and live in a cave, which actually sometimes sounds good. Many times doesn't.
All right. We had a whole segment of that yesterday about just low self-esteem and living under the sheets and not coming out of the bed.
That's me.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get a lockbox update from Megan Finnegan, find out how things are going, and share the good news and share how you can be a part of it, too. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC is from Gordon Fire Equipment, offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley. Family owned since 1956, GordonFire.com. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWade.coop. And Albany Pro Musica, presenting Pops Goes the Chorus, a cabaret-style concert with show tunes and popular songs, June 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shaker Meeting House, AlbanyProMusica.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and in our final moments, we are going to take a breath, put on a nasal strip, and take a deep breath.
We heard from Katty, who said, thanks for the show. Someone is snorting.
Me.
Snorting really heavily into the mic. Sorry to mention, but ..
I'm sorry.
I don't think it's snorting. It is.
It's sniffles.
It's sniffles.
Sorry.
It's allergy season.
It says shorting, but I think it means snorting.
Snorting.
Yeah, we'll assume. Okay, so let us end the show on a high note, and Megan Finnegan is here to do exactly that by telling us how much we have made in our lockbox challenge. Just to set this up real quick, Alan, we have been challenged by Mr. Big Hal.
He says 25 grand. It's an incredible amount of money. I hope everybody knows that. He's a wonderful man, Northwest Connecticut. And basically, he says, I'll give you 25 if you can get 200,000 from the time he started, which is 325 altogether. Now, look, folks, we have made $50,000 many mornings. We've been making, it's increasing every day. The question is, will the flow increase to the point where we make this? I need everybody to go to the lockbox. This is really serious right now. And I meet all of you in the street, and you always say, I've just put something in the lockbox. Terrific.
Yep, and a lot of people have put things in the lockbox.
All right, where
so
are we?
We are at $203,650 right now.
Wow, well, that's good. So, it's really coming up fast now.
So we're over the 200. We're over 200,000.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we need 325 to get there.
All right.
Which means in the next how many days, Megan?
Well, we have 13 days left. We need to raise $121,000.
Now
so
we
about
can
about 9,000 a day.
We have been making $120,000 during the fund drive every day.
Yeah.
Or $100,000 a day. So this really should be able to, and then we won't lose that $25,000.
Right. It would be nice to have that going into the
fund
drive.
Absolutely. So you can make this happen. You can make this a reality.
Oh boy.
It is within our grasp. 13 days. Let's do it. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. You can also call us 800-323-9262, which is the number you know by heart, 800-323-9262, and just go to extension 145. Mm-hmm. Or pretty much anyone would be able to help you, but 145 certainly. We will get the lockbox taken care of, and we'll get another update tomorrow and a tap on the shoulder to remind you, but get it done, get it done.
And 11:30 this today, you have the special guest Garrison Keillor coming in.
Garrison Keillor is coming in and will be in our studio at 11. You're going to stay and stick around, Rosemary? You're holding your heart.
So, wow. So
come on back. All right.
Still her heart.
We love you. Do what you have to do. WAMC.org. Well, speaking of love, I love all of you. Thank you very much for being part this morning in the panel.
Right.
And we will be back tomorrow. And yes, Alan, you got Congressional Corner, and then we'll talk to Garrison Keillor. You'll be with me for that at 11:30.
Okay.
Excellent. We'll be back after this break.